this week brought news of widespread job cuts at one of the state's largest employers. It's the second straight year that University of Vermont Health has implemented a big round of layoffs, and projections indicate a lot more belt tightening will be needed. On the other end of the state, the Upper Valley gets a new surgical center that claims it can reduce healthcare costs. In the Northeast Kingdom, an iconic library resumes a cherished tradition. In Franklin County, a business prepares to close. And all across our beautiful state, it's about to get more expensive to access public parks. All that and more ahead on Vermont This Week.
From the Vermont Public Studio in Winooski, this is Vermont This Week. Made possible in part by the Lintelak Foundation and Milne Travel.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Mark Davis, News Director of Vermont Public. I'm in for Mitch Wortlieb. It's Friday, June 12th. We have an excellent panel today. Let me introduce you to them right now. Joining us, we have Lola Dufour, reporter from Vermont Public. Paul Heintz is the Vermont reporter at the Boston Globe. And joining us for the very first time, we have Greta Sulsa. She's the Southern Vermont reporter for VT Digger. Thank you all for making the time to be here today. Beautiful day. Lola, we got to just go ahead and jump right into this here. University of Vermont Health, one of the biggest, most powerful institutions in this state, dropped some pretty big news this week. What's going on and what does this mean in the big picture?
Well, yeah, they announced that they were cutting 76 jobs across the entire network. So that's in Vermont and New York, and also restructuring 66. So 66 people were told, you may have a job, but you're going to have to reapply to something new, basically. The context is that healthcare in Vermont is extremely expensive, and our largest healthcare provider is also starting to lose money and is not doing well. That's for a lot of reasons. Some of it is, has been imposed by the state, right? We've seen a really big drug price cap. Some of it is lower utilization. And for all of these reasons, the health network has to undergo some really major changes. And I think that what we saw this week, it's very safe to say, will not be the last of what we see.
So let's step back here. UVM Health, we have three hospitals in Vermont. We have three hospitals in New York, a bunch of other satellite facilities across this state. An astonishing figure. I wanted to triple check and quadruple check with you when you got here. The Burlington Hospital, the one everyone most associates with UVM Health, loses how much money a day?
$460,000 a day.
Almost $500,000 a day.
Almost $500,000 a day. I've said this before. No one is worried that UVMMC is going to go bankrupt anytime soon. There are those active concerns about some of our smaller hospitals. UVMMC has a lot of runway, right? That being said, there are some really big structural problems there.
And of course, Lola, so much talk about healthcare costs in Vermont. UVM seems to bear the brunt of the criticism, I feel like, from regulators, from insurers, from the public. How much do these moves sort of mollify those concerns?
A little bit. So these moves, in addition to other things, right? So not too long ago, a state-appointed overseer hired these consultants. And these consultants crunched a bunch of numbers, like went to clinics, talked to providers, and decided that the hospital network has to cut $100 million a year in expenses every year for the next 3 years, right? So that's the goal. And at that time, those consultants also said, by the way, these are nice numbers, right? Like, we're giving you the number we think you can achieve, not necessarily the number like we really think you should be hitting. The cuts that we saw this week will save the network about $9 million. I'm not a huge math person, but like there's a big gap.
So they're saying $300 million over 3 years. This cut, which obviously is devastating to a lot of people, gets you $9 million. The obvious follow-up would be, should we be looking for more layoff rounds at UVM and the health in the near future?
And I think the answer is yes. I'm not going to say like in what time frame, right? Yeah. But I think everyone expects there to be more. I talked to that state-appointed overseer today, Mike Smith, who said, this is a start. And I talked to Owen Foster, the chair of the Green Mountain Care Board, and he also said, this is a great start. I also heard regulators say, we're glad that they are trying to protect direct patient care as much as possible. The cuts that were made this week were mostly administrative. There were, you know, some nurses in primary care clinics, et cetera, that apparently got cut. But by and large, we are not talking about people who provide direct patient care. And that has been an explicit priority, both from regulators and also new leadership at the hospital system that has said, we know that we desperately need to reduce our expenses. And we also don't want to break things.
Paulola brought up regulators. It's sort of been a long-running tension here between healthcare regulators in the state and UVM. Can you sort of help fill in that gap of that context and sort of where we are now?
I can certainly try. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as Lola touched on, the response to this news, obviously the response from the employees who lost their jobs, it's not a positive one. From the unions who represent them, not a positive one. But from people who are sort of in those health policy circles and who are thinking about the overall cost of care, it seems like you're seeing some kind of measured positive response along the lines of, it's a start. We're glad to see that the hospital is taking seriously the need to cut costs. And there does seem to be a shift over the last year or so, as far as I can tell. You know, for many years, the Green Mountain Care Board was really fighting the UVM Health Network, UVM Health Now, in a pretty dramatic fashion. It got a little bit nasty at times. I think UVM Health finally got the message, and it, I think notably last fall, reduced a number of very high-level positions, changed leadership of the hospital. You know, I think Dr. Loeffler is seen as a straight shooter by many people in health policy circles. And so, you know, and I think the involvement of Mike Smith in that liaison role between the care board and the hospital, it seems to be working as intended, at least in terms of facilitating this conversation between these entities. So, you know, people are at least talking more positively, I think, about the ability or the recognition about what needs to happen. But of course, as Lola said, they've got a long way to go to actually make this to balance the budget, I guess.
Well, and it's hard to overstate the significance of this institution in Vermont. We're talking about 15,000 people. We're talking about hospitals that everyone's either been to or had family that goes to, one of the most important employers. You were sort of talking off camera, sort of Lola, about the public perception and the way these things are being handled at that level and communicating it to the public. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to the question you were asking earlier, a year and a half ago, right, the care board cut UVM's budget by $80 million, something like that. And the response was to say, okay, we're going to cut dialysis, we're going to cut primary care clinics. And it was, you know, it kind of did not go over well, yeah. Right? And regulators responded very aggressively, and so did lawmakers. And then soon after, we saw UVM oust its leader. And, you know, while everyone kind of said this was mutual, tried to be diplomatic about it, UVM also said at the time, acknowledged, we know we need to reset. And, you know, seemed to have found itself where all of a sudden it was public enemy number one. And that is not a good place to be. And so, yeah, I think we are seeing everyone play a lot nicer right now, right? We are seeing UVM tell regulators, we hear you, we're trying to make these changes, we're trying to save money without also doing things that are going to hurt patients. But the really big open question is whether or not they can hit these really monumental targets.
$300 million, right. Well, I'm guessing we'll be sitting around this table talking about that much in the years to come. Huge news up here. Pretty big healthcare news on the other end of the state. Lola, sticking with you here. Regulators this week approved a new operation. It's pretty common in most parts of the country, fairly novel here in Vermont. Tell us about the Upper Valley Surgical Center.
Yeah. So there is this thing called a type of healthcare facility called an ambulatory surgery center. And it is basically a standalone surgery center where you can go and it's not associated with a hospital and you can get outpatient procedures done. And these kinds of centers have become incredibly popular across the country because they're usually cheaper. Outcomes are usually just as good as they are in hospitals. And they can often get patients in faster, right? We have only one multi-specialty surgery center in the entire state. It's the Green Mountain Surgery Center in Colchester. And it took years for that surgery center to get approval. This one, meanwhile, got approval in 6 months. And I'm sure the folks in the Upper Valley would not tell you, like, oh, it was only 6 months. Yeah. That's great. But compared to what it's been like in the past, it was relatively smooth sailing. And, you know, I talked to Owen Foster, the chair of the Green Mountain Care Board, and he said that was on purpose.
Right.
I am trying to learn from our mistakes.
Well, yeah, I mean, speaking of mistakes, I mean, to put this in context, basically these centers are saying we can get this done faster and cheaper than the big hospitals can. There are almost 30 of these, I believe your reporting said, in New Hampshire. There's 15 in Maine. This will now just be the second in Vermont. And obviously this center is going to be just a few miles from the other healthcare behemoth we have in the state. We just talked about UVM. Dartmouth-Hitchcock is the other one. This has to be a bit of a shot across the bow at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, right?
The folks who are opening the surgery center would not say so. But yes, to your point, right, I think there is now this kind of emerging thought in the healthcare space that the big problem in Vermont is that we have a hyper-consolidated marketplace. And basically, we have created a monopoly. And it's sick, right? So our prices are really high, but it's also like not doing super well. And that what we really need is more competition in the marketplace, right? And that is explicitly what Owen Foster told me, is we need competition, we need lower cost providers. And in general, right, hospital transformation efforts are happening at the state level. And the big idea is that we need to migrate care out of hospitals.
Right. Well, the other piece, I mean, this comes as they're talking about a birthing center in central Vermont, for example, more facilities like this to improve wait times, drive down costs. Well, we could probably give this whole show over to healthcare at this rate, but we should move on. The Haskell Free Library, Paul, famously sits right on the international border at Derby Line in Stansted. That has long been sort of an iconic symbol of Vermont. In the past couple years, it's become internationally known as a symbol of tensions between Canada and the Trump administration. You were up there recently for what a lot of locals are saying is very good news.
That's right. You know, the more recent backstory is that this library, beautiful place, has sat on the right on the border. The border runs right through the facility. You can see a line of electric tape across the floor, and you can kind of jump back and forth across the border if you so choose. You know, for a long time, the U.S. has allowed Canadians to cross into the United States in order to enter the front door of the library without going through customs. It's this very unique arrangement. It was, you know, the library officials viewed as a somewhat tenuous one. Sure enough, when President Trump took office last year, his then Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, made a visit to the Haskell Library just weeks into his tenure. And she was told by Border Patrol agents at the time that there were security concerns at the library. You know, Border Patrol officials said, well, people can kind of slip through the library from one side of the border to the other. Library officials contest that. But it led Border Patrol to end that practice in March of last year and to say, if you are Canadian and you want to go into this library, essentially you have to go through customs and around that front door. Well, library officials at the time said, we're just going to open up the back door, which may not actually help with these supposed security concerns. But, you know, it was a more complicated situation than that. Sure. They needed to create a real entrance. They needed to make sure that it was an accessible entrance. So the work on that finally finished in recent weeks. And there was a ceremony on Wednesday marking the formal inauguration of this new door. So at one level, this is a new door to a library. And it's not that fancy a door, but it, I think, is a very symbolic change. And there was at the ceremony, there were almost about 100 people there and dignitaries from both sides of the border who had a really clear message. No one mentioned the president's name. People certainly alluded to the decisions that led to the necessity of that door. But mostly people were talking about the ties between these two communities on the other side. In Stanstead on the Canadian side and Derby Line on the Vermont side, these are communities that, you know, have been very close for a long time. And, you know, people describe this as sort of a bridge reconnecting these two groups of people.
Quickly, you had reported that, you know, this new door cost about $500,000, and half of that money was raised internationally because it had to go through historic preservation on both sides. There was an anecdote in your story I'm hoping you can quickly recount. That Kristi Noem visit was quite infamous. You reported there was another visitor, Tom Holman, the border czar, a controversial figure himself. He was there recently. It sounded like that went a little differently.
Yeah, so when Kristi Noem visited, she famously referred to Canada as the 51st state in a way that was, you know, perceived as quite insulting by the library officials there, many of whom are Canadian. I learned when I was up there on Wednesday, I did not know this, that when Tom Holman, the border czar, was in Vermont about a month ago, he made a visit, a very quiet visit to the Haskell. And the same tour guide who had brought Kristi Noem around, a woman named Kathy Converse, who's a retired English teacher, an American, she saw Holman with his security detail, recognized him, and offered to give him a tour as well. As he was walking around the facility, he paused at one point, she told me, presented her with a medallion with his name on it, his position, the Great Seal of the United States. And she interpreted it as an important moment in which she perceived this as a different signal coming from the administration, less antagonistic, at least towards this one facility. I don't want to overstate the significance of this, but to this person and this library, it seemed like a shift. And, you know, it does not seem like Border Patrol has said anything concerning about the new door. You know, library officials are hoping that it'll get back to business as usual.
Nice reporting there. Well, we've got some tough news in Franklin County going on. There perhaps a little reason for hope. After more than 125 years in operation, the Franklin Foods Processing Center in Enosburg Falls is preparing to close in just a few weeks. There are 100 people employed there. They make cream cheese. It's a very important local employer. Franklin Foods was bought by a German company several years ago. They're getting out of the cream cheese business in the United States. Perhaps a little room for optimism here. The state is working with a group of supporters who want to reopen that facility under new ownership. They want to make plant-based cream cheese, among other things. And they're hoping that if this all comes off, they can employ around 20 people. Greta, it is finally warm. It finally feels like summer, which means we're going to be seeing tens of thousands of people in Vermont going to state parks. They might be curious to learn. They're probably going to be paying more for that privilege in the not-too-distant future, are they?
Yeah, so both state parks, Department of Fish and Wildlife lands, and the U.S. Forest Service recreation sites, where there are various proposals for increased recreation fees. Top line, these agencies are, you know, feeling cost crunched. There's, increased inflation, deferred maintenance that all of these agencies are facing. The Forest Service has proposed increased dollar amounts for various camping, boating, and picnicking sites. And that proposal is up for public comment until the end of July. But around 80% or more can go to that revenue that will come in through the U.S. Forest Service through this proposed fee hike will go towards local maintenance to address wear and tear. Some of these sites, though, were free to enter previously, and now they will come with a fee. There's also premium sites that will that involve lean-tos or access to water bodies that the Forest Service says is more expensive to upkeep. So there's that proposal. There's also the Department of Wildlife is considering a fee for those accessing fishing areas. There are around 200 fishing areas in the state of Vermont. This would apply to those without a license to hunt or fish on these lands. Also would not apply to children. But there's a recognition by the department that they need additional funding due to,
So what this is getting at here, I think, is sort of this long-running tension we've heard. If you're a hunter, if you fish, you have to pay the state. You have to have a license to do that. If you want to jump in a kayak or canoe at these 200 spots, you don't have to do that right now. The plan is to charge a fee so that you then have to, if you have a fishing license already, you wouldn't have to pay the fee. But this is effectively, what, broadening the customer base for these fees? Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. They also, the department said that it addresses an equity issue.
Yeah.
The fact that those who are regularly hunting and fishing on these lands have to pay a fee, but more casual recreators are not facing fees. They're trying to, broaden their customer base and broaden that, that fee. There's also a proposal on state park lands to have more flexibility within the department to increase costs based on use, demand, and cost recovery is how they phrase it. So they're also feeling the effects of inflationary pressures and need to address maintenance costs and want to have more flexibility to increase fees or change fees to pay based on demand and use. And they're under this proposed rule, they would have 90 days of notice for the public to see those fees.
Interestingly, Governor Scott, usually not such a huge fan of fees, seems to be in favor of these. So we'll see there. Quickly, the Forest Service has come up for you a couple times this week. Of course, that's the federal agency. I believe there's, about 400,000 acres that the Forest Service has in Vermont along the Green Mountains. You did a very deep dive into what life was like in the Forest Service in Vermont in the early days of the Trump administrations. Can you just sort of give us the quick highlights of what you learned in that reporting?
Yeah, top line. So background, the U.S. Forest Service has a multi-use mandate to maintain lands for logging, for wildlife prevention, but also for long range uses, research, wildlife management, flood resilience, various usages on these lands for the public. And in the first few months of the Trump administration, I accessed these internal documents, internal messages between leadership and the Green Mountain National Forest, revealing budget precarity, staffing capacity being limited, and also spending authority being frozen and significantly reduced in order to do work on the ground. And so I accessed those documents, tried to trace that history, seeing the kind of confusion within the workers and messages from leadership, and trace that to today. So we do see these increased recreation fees at the Green Mountain National Forest. There's also this plan to reorganize the Forest Service. And as part of that, there's a review to potentially close a Burlington facility among others across the country.
And that one is perhaps less controversial than some of the many other things that they're talking about. It was excellent reporting. Effectively, what you found, it was chaos down there, especially in the early months, and even the local officials didn't quite know what was going on. It was excellent reporting. Recommend everyone go to Digger and check it out. Paul, speaking of the early days of the Trump administration, we had some news this week on a case that came to international attention, actually, early on. That would be Moza Madawi, the Palestinian activist, Upper Valley resident, who the Trump administration has been trying to deport. Several months ago, an immigration judge sort of shut that down, so the government hadn't met their burden to prove that. Things have changed recently?
Yeah, the immigration judge who shot that down was subsequently fired in a purge of a number of immigration judges. And her replacement seems to have come to a different conclusion and issued an order of removal saying that he'll need to leave the country and go to Jordan. This is unlikely to happen imminently because there is sort of a parallel legal situation playing out in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which stems back to his original arrest in Vermont in April of 2025. As viewers will recall, he was imprisoned here for about 2 weeks. A federal judge in Vermont released him, essentially saying that he was facing discrimination due to his protected speech. And the government had appealed that case to the Second Circuit. Hearings last September on that question of whether the federal judge had overstepped. And for reasons I cannot tell you, there still is not a ruling in that case. And even once there is, it'll probably be appealed higher, perhaps to the Supreme Court. Jeez. So, you know, I guess if you're him, it's good news that this is winding along slowly because he'll remain in the U.S. During that time, but certainly a troubling development for him this week.
All right. Well, we want to end on a happier note. We had a lot of talk about state parks earlier in this show. I was joking around with the panelists. I'm going to need some good state park story. There was one that stood out above all others, Lolo DeFore, with the time we have left. Your best state park story in Vermont.
I got married at a state park, and the venue rental was $200. Which, and to be honest, I felt like I was getting away with something. Not to endorse, I'm not endorsing the fact that...
No, we don't do that here.
But it did feel like a steal, and that was New Discovery State Park. Osmoor Pond is really, really, really beautiful.
And it will be free this weekend. It's the free state park day across the state, so you can go to the historic marker that has no doubt already been placed where Lola got married. Excellent recommendation. Paul Heinz, how many state parks have you been to recently?
I've been to two this week. Yeah. Climbed Camel's Hump on Tuesday and was on Waterbury Reservoir last night for some boating, swimming. My nine-year-old did some water skiing, which was a sight to behold. So yeah, hope to get out a lot more.
All right. Well, can't say it much better than that, and we have to leave it here. My thanks to our panel, Lola DeFore from Vermont Public. Paul Heinz from the Boston Globe, Greta Salsa from VT Digger. Thank you all so very much. And thank you to our loyal audience for watching and listening. Don't worry, Mitch is back next week, and we'll see you again next Friday.